We've watched the world's response to COVID-19 unfolding, and as technologists, it's natural that we'd explore if an app can help with that. So let's look at a couple of different projects that have gone live in a very short time to have a very big positive impact. First of all, Elaine is back with me. And also joining us is Microsoft Japan's Kazumi-san, assisted by Christina, to tell us more about their COVID-19 response projects. Welcome to Build 2020, everyone. So, Kazumi-san, can you please tell us about the job that you do at Microsoft?
Sure. Yeah. I work in the Microsoft Japan. Developer PMM in Japan. Yeah, working with Azure, mainly Azure community and developers communities. Yeah. And I have been in charge of a server system and design for internet and non-stop architecture and distributed architecture and construction, utilizing OSSs and Linux. Yeah. After working and visiting researcher at the Japan Medical Association and Research Institute, yeah, I work at the medical. Yeah.
That's great. Thank you. Elaine, how about you just refresh people if they didn't join your previous session about what your role is at Microsoft?
Yep, I work in the Fast Track for Azure team, where I manage the data team for the Asia region. And that's around all about architectural advice, unblocking deployment issues, and making sure that people love Azure.
Great, thank you. And Christina, you have a role at Microsoft as well, though you're here to help us support the very brave Kazumi doing a session that is not in his native language. So thank you so much for joining us as well. Can you tell us a little bit about the application that was developed in Microsoft Japan to help with the COVID-19 response? I understand Kazumi started out with an application because he thought that he could help.
Trust together from Singapore and while making headlines Chris and me and we're discussing how technology can help this crisis. Me and Christina are building on the aid website after the earthquake in Japan in 2011. I used to work as a researcher in Japan Medical Association. It seems natural for us that Japan would need a similar app. When we decided to open source the project, we had no idea that we would end up helping our government build an official app for the entire country. Could you for us, Christina?
So we started off as an open source project, but actually right now, we are helping the Japanese government to build an official application, official contact tracing application, and really looking forward to putting it out there for Japanese people to use.
Thank you. So that's quite different to the project that you've worked on, Elaine. Can you tell me a little bit about what you were involved in?
Yeah, so the project I was involved in was with New South Wales Health Pathology around delivering patients results of their COVID-19 tests. And that's a massive system. So it was a collaboration between a number of different parties, both some fantastic developers at the customer side, also a team of developers from commercial software engineering actually spread across a number of different countries, and also other vendors involved as well in different parts of that solution, all working together to get the result delivered in the time needed.
So, Kazumi, can you explain to me why you went open source? Open source development is something that I'm not involved in much. So tell me why that was a benefit to your approach.
Wait. Can you show me? Yeah, I have screen shares. Yeah, I think the first empower every person and every organization on the planet to achieve more. Yeah, I first wrote and commented in source code. Yeah, our mission. Yeah, empower every person. Yeah, and could you wait? Yeah, and why open source? Yeah, the first. Yeah, transparency. Yeah, and second. Yeah, security. Yeah, and third. And internationalization. Yeah, and fourth. Collaboration. Yeah. Yeah, that's all.
Yeah, it's really interesting to me that you were thinking about internationalization even in those early stages of the project. Elaine, so in your case, you didn't go with an open source approach. Why not? What was sort of the deciding factors for the project you were working on?
Yeah, so being such a large project, one of the key deciding factors in to be able to deliver something in that time period was we wanted to reuse as much as possible architectural patterns that have been proven out with the customer previously, as well as use a lot of code that had been used previously as well. And so it's quite a complex process if you then have to check all the licenses of every one of those pieces, as well as ensuring all that tight systems integration doesn't publish anything that would cause a security issue. So we're taking a different approach in that the project wasn't open source, but now that it's been delivered and we have more time, what the commercial software engineering team looked to do is then do some anonymized write-ups and pull some of the assets out of that project that might be more relevant for open source examples for people starting from scratch and publish that out without some of the other larger pieces of the solution.
That's a really good point, because when I hear the term open source, I don't think of things like licenses, because it seems to be this big open collaboration field. But there is sort of a lot of structure into how open source works and what's allowed to be used and what's not. And I love the fact that even though you were under quite a time critical project, you took the time to be mindful that what you were doing was going to adhere to those rules before you were happy to release into the open source community. Christina, can you explain for me some of the elements of why this project was maybe a little bit different than most of the other software development projects that you've worked on before?
Sure, yeah. I think it was talked a little bit in a previous session, but first, speed mattered, but at the same time, we really needed to balance that with, you know, concerns about privacy and different internalization that we just mentioned, so that was really hard, and that's where we took a really agile approach. So Kazumi-san was really focusing on development, while I was taking care more of sort of PM side of the things, so that we could maximize our capabilities and deliver within the time frame we had.
And Elaine, did you have any particular challenges on your project that you had to address?
Yeah, so we were also working very fast, which meant things are changing as you develop. So we had to have very strong testing, automated deployments and all those kind of things. But then there was also the people side of things. So we had an absolutely amazing team collaborating in all different locations. So our tech lead, Daniel, over in Hong Kong, Hannes over in New Zealand, completely different time zones. And then a load testing team, for example, led by David in Australia, with the load testers sitting in Japan doing work for us. So we had a lot of challenges with, you know, people going through various stages of lockdowns and their lives and times changing, but also a lot of advantages where we could use a bunch of those different time zones to make sure that we shifted work around between different people in the team to ensure that we could deliver in the time required for the customer.
I'm really impressed that you actually thought about an international approach and using those different time zones in a project that was so time constrained. And I think one of the things that the world has woken up to is the power of being able to use resources and to get a perspective from a whole different range of people, no matter where we are geographically situated, but how to work together as a team to maximize the advantage of that. I've been doing a role for Redmond based here in Microsoft Australia. And so we found our feet as a team with a colleague in Switzerland and some in North America of how to work those sort of time zones to our advantage. It's sometimes a challenge to get together, but if I can pass something off to someone else and they can do it while asleep, it's amazing how we can sort of keep those wheels turning with an international effort. Kazumi-san, can you explain about some of the Microsoft technologies that you used in this project?
I'm using development in Xamarin. .NET Core cross-platform development. We can develop two platforms, on the Android and the iOSes, with one business logic and design. And the amount of coding has been greatly reduced. Since client server same language and C#, C# language learning costs have also been reduced. We can develop two platforms and Android, iOS, and Azure Functions. I'm using the Azure Develop Pipeline and the App Centers. Quickly delivery to for test developers. Pipeline free automated and deployment to integrated deployment to Azure and Xamarin.
One of the things I love as an IT pro about those Azure DevOps pipelines is that I can put some compliance and controls in as part of the infrastructure layer, and the Azure Resource Manager will enforce those when you go and deploy your applications through those pipelines too. And it's great to see that testing with the App Center. Elaine, was there anything particular complicated about the technology stack that you were working with?
Yeah, I mean, for us, part of the complication was trying to make sure that the system would scale up to the level that could be required, because it's quite hard to predict scale on something that, you know, hasn't necessarily been an application like this in the Australian market before. So we did a lot of, that's where a lot of that load testing came in. But also we reused a lot of pieces of technology from other projects and architectural patterns to make sure that we were confident with that. But much of that was the customer's technologies of preference that might be slightly different to what our team would normally work with. For example, for Cosmos DB, we're using the Mongo API. A lot of the functions code was written in TypeScript and some of those other things, which I guess people don't normally think about traditional Microsoft developers using, but we tend to use a lot in the team.
It sounds like it would have been challenging to bring all those different components together. It wasn't like you were just starting with a brand new app that you were writing from scratch, right? You had all those integrations to handle. That's really interesting. Christina, can you tell me a little bit about this internationalization? Because I know we mentioned that earlier. What exactly did that mean? And what did you have to take into account with that application to try and maybe use it for a global audience?
Right. So first thing is, because we knew that addressing COVID-19 would, you know, work better if we cooperate internationally. So all of our documentation, we made sure it's both in English and in Japanese. That was the first thing. And then for people who, they're not only Japanese people living in Japan, so the user interface and user experience itself is all customized in 56 languages using machine translation cognitive services of Microsoft. That was another thing. And also making it open source helped drive people from all over the world help us. And we had Xamariners, a Xamarin community from Singapore join us. And they were having, a literal sprint using Azure DevOps and all the other technology that Microsoft has to do the project management together. So it was really multilingual effort on all fronts, both on development and product side.
Well done. Look, I'm so proud of both of these efforts. It's great to be able to tell the world, you know, how we're using technology to help out with this global pandemic. I want to thank you all for joining me today. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Okay,